Behavior is motivated. When you talk about survival, for example, you know, biologically speaking, and evolution, I mean, survival isn't anything unless it's psychological. It's, you know, who wants to survive if you don't want? You have to want to be able to survive. So, it, you know, there's motivation behind all these different habits that might be tied up with your breathing. And then you have to identify the exact behaviors. What is a person doing? Like a person may be aborting the breath. They breathe out, they get near the end of the breath, and they immediately take a breath. They get near the end of the breath, they immediately take a breath. What's happening there? This is a very simple thing. As they let the air out, they start to get anxious. Maybe they even verbalize that, I'm worried about getting enough air. I need to take over the breathing. I need to do the breathing. It's not going to happen. I got to do it. You always hear people saying, remember to breathe, as if you have to remember to breathe. I mean, that's silly. We have to remember to breathe. Yeah. It's absurd.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, that whole end of things, if you look at the behavior itself, and there's an aborting of the breath, and there's that emotion embedded in it. And then when the person takes that breath early, they get an immediate outcome that serves them. It reduces their worry. It reduces anxiety. And air hunger is a really big subject. It gets tied up with it. What can happen when you abort the breath and you don't really let all the air out? Then when you go to reach for air, there's not enough. You go to reach and then you get claustrophobic. God, I can't get enough air. Okay, now you've built in air hunger into the situation. And air hunger is learned. I mean, think of your life. You put a blanket over your head and you feel like you can't get enough oxygen. Or a lot of people put a COVID mask on. They feel like they can't breathe. But they're getting all the oxygen they need. It's nothing to do with oxygen. It's about claustrophobia here. So this person then develops a kind of claustrophobia that's now embedded in that breath. And you'll find people constantly reaching, trying to get that breath. They have air hunger all the time. And they keep, as they breathe out, they abort that, constantly trying to get it sooner, as soon as possible. So you look at into the specific behaviors. That's just an example of an exhale. You know, there's all kinds of breathing behaviors that we look at when we do this work. And then you have to look at the outcomes. What are the outcomes? How are those outcomes serving those individuals? For example, you might be really amazed. For example, some people, when they start to take larger breaths, thinking they're going to get more air, and they feel like they're in charge and in control, and that keeps them going. But what happens is that they lose carbon dioxide when they do that. You know, you really hardly need to take any air in breathing. I mean, for every liter of blood you can move through your lungs, you can move 20 liters of air, and you only need 1 liter of air. So, you know, it's not really about not getting enough oxygen in a healthy person. It's about basically, a very fundamental part of respiration is essentially looking at or regulating the carbon dioxide concentrations in the body in various places, like in the brain, you know, and throughout the system, you know, that carbon dioxide level, as we'll see, is so extremely important, that concentration. So now this person is taking these deeper breaths, and when they do that, then you lose blood in the brain. That with that loss of carbon dioxide, you get vasoconstriction in the brain. Not only that, but the red blood cells and the hemoglobin in the red blood cells, they're becoming too alkaline, and they don't give up the oxygen as easily as they normally would. So it contributes to an oxygen deficit. So you get constriction of vessels in the brain almost immediately. You get this constriction.
Yeah. And can I just comment? The constriction is there because the primary vascular purpose of carbon dioxide is it is the primary vasodilator. When you have sufficient carbon dioxide in your system, it will open your blood vessels much more effectively than nitric oxide, because nitric oxide has a dark side, binds to complex four in your mitochondria, and it shuts down your electron transport chain. So ideally, you want to do it with carbon dioxide. So there's a huge downside to blowing off your CO2 prematurely through these nasty breathing habits that you have no, most of you have no idea that you've developed.
Now, if you get back to the outcome of the behavior, you see, this, the outcome here in this case is that loss of blood in the brain, loss of oxygen, loss of glucose, et cetera, and electrolyte changes that, that occur in the brain very, very quickly that then lead to things like lactic acidosis in the brain cells, that kind of thing. I mean, this is really quick. Most people have no idea that this is going on. Now, what happens with some people, but because of that, you get a lot of emotion in many people. It triggers, you get what we call disinhibition, where emotion is discharged. And so some people, it may, depending on your background, who you are, your history, your experience, some people, they get angry. And this may serve them. They can get angry at their wife, they get angry at their husband, they can get angry at the people around them, they can control the people around them by becoming negative. And so the way that they get to that anger is by overventilating. So they take these larger breaths, they lose carbon dioxide, they get this vasoconstriction in the brain, they get this triggering of emotion that they need to be able to cope with an environment that's difficult for them. Maybe they've come from very traumatic kind of a background, and the only way they could really cope with it is to get angry. But a lot of times they're really frightened. But when they overventilate and you get that state change in the brain, that may then trigger anger. I once did a demonstration with a woman. I was doing a class, and I had people divided into pairs. And one was a therapist and one was the client. And we had them deliberately lowering the CO2 levels, okay, and then having them bring it back, which is a very important part of how you deal with this. And what happened, I interviewed this one woman who was a client, and I asked her, I said, well, how did you respond to this? What did you get from this? She said, I felt like picking up a stick and hitting my partner over the head. That's how I felt. Okay? That was simply by lowering her carbon dioxide level.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever she's in a certain situation where she feels threatened, where she can breathe that way, that triggers an emotion that's very useful to her. Because she revealed, she was a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she revealed to us that this is how, honestly, she said, she controls her husband, she said.
Mm-hmm.
See, so breathing is really playing a major role in her life in navigating her challenges. This is a simple example, but the outcome of what you do when you're breathing is really, really important to understand what's happening. And there's really a lot more than just the physiology, say the overbreathing part of it. There are things like this, that when you overventilate, you get a symptom. You get a physiological change, okay? And that physiological change, people have learned to respond to that change in their own unique ways. Some people, for example, when they get dizzy because they lose oxygen in the brain, when they overventilate, to them, they feel like they're losing control. And they freak out. They don't know what's going on. They can't focus. They don't remember what's going on. They feel, you know, unable to function. They're really highly challenged, and they freak out. I mean, they're on the verge of a panic attack. The next person goes, hey, this is, you know, this is kind of cool. You know, I really like this. This is really great, you know. And so they have a whole different response to it. And so one of the things we're always looking at are these physiological, how people relate to the physiological changes. Like a lot of people think that fast breathing, for example, you know, is going to essentially arouse you and maybe become anxious or something like that. And the fast breathing isn't a good thing. And the slow breathing is really where it's all at. You know, after all, the slow breathing is about the parasympathetic nervous system. You probably know about that. And then, you know, and then the fast breathing, so, oh, that's the sympathetic nervous system. So you need to get to a sympathetic mode. Well, in reality, when you really look at it, this is just a correlational finding. Mm-hmm. That people who breathe fast, more of them are anxious than people who breathe slow. But then you have to ask yourself the question, why do people breathe fast in the first place? When people get worried about not getting enough oxygen, they start doing whatever they can to get more air. They open their mouths. They breathe faster. They do all kinds of things. Okay, so it's the fast breathing is correlated, say, with negative arousal. But the fact of the matter is there are lots of people out there who feel relaxed when they breathe fast. They take small, fast breaths, and they feel so peaceful.
Like you.
Like me. Like right now. Look at me right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you can have really healthy CO2 levels if you breathe fast, if you know what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look at the system. You know, there are reflexes that regulate the CO2 level. You know, there are sensors in the brain and the arterial system that are sensitive to carbon dioxide and to the pH of various fluids. You know, the oxygen, the system is sensitive to oxygen in the arterial system, not in the brain, but in the arterial system. And the system, these reflex centers, regulate the breathing on this input about carbon dioxide concentration, pH, oxygen, and so on. And, you know, and it wasn't designed to go out of whack because you get stressed. It wasn't designed to go wrong if you're challenged in your life. The only time you can breathe well is when you're completely relaxed and feeling good. The rest of the time, your respiration is a basket case. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can, you know, in working life, for instance, our work, we did a lot of work with the special U.S. forces. And that's what they're really interested in, is in crisis, people are breathing properly. They don't just implement a breathing technique to make things right in the middle of a challenging situation in the military. They have to be, you need optimal respiration and acid-based physiology regulation, which is what we're making reference to, at all times. Breathing is regulating acid-based physiology in your body. I mean, it's amazing. Breathing is incredible. And so many people think it's all about oxygen. You got the bigger the breath, the more oxygen you're gonna get. When in reality, you're gonna get less oxygen because you're getting all that vasoconstriction in the coronaries, you know, mm-hmm. in the brain, all over the place is what you get. So anyway,
let's stop here for and just go
sure.
and just review the sure. acid-based physiology, not in depth, but the reason why it's so important. You mentioned earlier that it's like a 10-to-1 ratio in excess you have, which is your reserve capacity to overbreathe. And the reason you have that is you may need it. It could save your life. And
that's right.
You need, your body has to have the capacity to change your pH almost instantaneously. Because
right.
if it didn't, you
right.
would die 100%.
Right.
The only
exactly.
way you do that is through your breathing. So why don't you
exactly.
take it there? Because that's such an important point. Because people don't, why is this the case? Because you have to have it to survive.
Yeah, you absolutely do. See, carbon dioxide forms carbonic acid. And there's a very, I'm not going to go into it.
Yeah, we don't want to go deep.
There's a very, very simple little equation, which is, say, we're talking about your blood.
Mm-hmm.
The equation addresses how much carbon dioxide is in the blood and how much of a, there's an electrolyte that's very important that regulates acid-base balance in your body also, and it's called a bicarbonate. And it's the relationship between the carbon dioxide and the bicarbonate. Now, the carbon dioxide is controlled by the way you breathe. So as soon as you step into the picture, as soon as you start to take over and you take the control away from the reflexes, we don't know where you're going to end up. You might be okay because you can link it. We're always coordinating these things. Like when I'm eating and talking, I'm breathing, right? They have to be coordinated and linked. This is behavior. They get linked. Sometimes they get out of sync. And then people are really in trouble. They're struggling. Whenever they eat, their breathing is all wrong. When they're talking, the breathing goes wrong. They get real lightheaded when they're talking. They can't function. They get lightheaded because they're overventilating. They're constantly trying to take another breath, you know, while they're talking to people. And then they get real, you know, concerned about communicating with people. They don't talk anymore. They withdraw. They don't want to be involved because as soon as they start talking, they just get completely in trouble. They have no idea why. So it's because I'm stressed or because I have social anxiety or something like that. And they make up a reason like we all do. We all come up with reasons why we have symptoms. But in reality, what's going on there, they're losing carbon dioxide. They're getting completely disoriented, can't function. I worked with a man with a PhD in mathematics once, and when I had him overventilate, he could not count backwards by sevens from 200, and he's a PhD in mathematics. And he said to me, "I can't believe this. Is this for real? Is it real? I can't count." So here this person is, you know, they're socializing and they're reaching for all this air. Maybe they think that's good too. They have all the belief systems that we have to address in it all, because that brings all kinds of issues to dysfunctional breathing. But I wanted to get back to that one thing. I was talking about those symptoms and how people learn to respond to symptoms differently. That's something that we have to address, because people develop fears of breathing because of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
That when they overventilate and they get these symptoms, now they're afraid to even think about breathing. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to attend to it at all, because as soon as they do, everything goes wrong.
Why don't you elaborate on those symptoms? Because that's a key. It'll give people a real good idea if they're suffering from overbreathing. And most of you watching this are. At some time, not continuously, but when you're triggered.
Yeah, it's what I was saying right there, that those particular symptoms, you know, they're not going to kill you. You know, nothing's going to happen to you. So what we do is we do desensitization work. So people...
Let them know what the symptoms are. Like headache was one, right? Nausea could be another one.
Oh, yeah. I can give you, I have a list of symptoms if you'd like.